We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Chook.
Thank you very much. We set the tone for today's proceedings with a warning sign photographed in the West Lancashire Evening Gazette.
Road rough, remove false teeth.
And Elizabeth Sturrock of St. Anne's-on-Sea saw fit to send us that. And now to our panel. And we start off with an old friend of the News Quiz, the Observer's former US correspondent, Simon Hoggart, who's been recalled from Washington and given the toughest job in journalism, which is to help out his team captain, Richard Ingrams. And they are fighting last week's victorious duo, the Independent's Mark Stein, and everybody else's Alan Corran. And we start round one with some unfinished business. A quick reaction from Mary Whitehouse on the first live TV broadcast from the Commons.
We were told we would only see head and shoulders of MPs, but in the event we saw much more than that, and I thought it was very interesting.
And that shock revelation was quoted in the Eastern Daily Press and sent to us by E.M. Risins, who lives in a house called The Bumbles in Erpingham. Anyway, Richard, a nice, simple one to start you off, and then we'll gradually make them easier. Your question is, which ladies first again?
Is it my friend Sir Anthony Meyer and his victorious 60 votes in the great contest? Is it? Well, the man of the decade, Sir Anthony Meyer, scored 33 votes against the leaderine, and 20 other people abstained.
That's right.
Which was hailed as a triumph for Mrs. Thatcher by the press.
That's exactly so. It's all about the clouds of ozone-friendly white smoke that billowed from Westminster's chimneys, announcing the election of a new Tory pontiff, Her Holiness the Margaret Thatcher. She polled 314 votes with 24 papers described as spoilt, since they had crosses beside the wrong name. The significance of the vote depended on which paper you read. For the Mail, it was...
a resounding victory for Mrs. Thatcher.
For the Express...
a massive vote of confidence.
While for the Mirror, it was...
a shattering blow to her credibility.
And perhaps to that of the Daily Mirror editor as well. Meanwhile, the hunt is on for the 33 anonymous and terrified wets. They all voted for Sir Anthony Meyer by leaving a damp patch next to his name. Simon, it's good to have you back on the quiz. What was everywhere last Wednesday but not a drop to drink?
Well, I was going to say it was a great water sell-off, the water shares. They're also privatising Aldermaston. Did you notice that as well, the nuclear weapons research? Which makes you wonder what will happen if we have a nuclear war. And they actually have to get a privatised weapons delivery system. The fellow says, you know, it's time to take out Moscow. And the bloke says, I'm sorry, I've got a job in Enfield tomorrow. It is the water shares, which turn out to be worth twice as much as the government's getting. We're making ourselves incredibly rich, or some people are, by paying far less for what we already owned than it's worth.
Quite. That will appear in the Observer crossword puzzle, 13 down. This refers to the government's liquidity problem, water, and this month's Dutch auction of our local water and... authorities. The Water Board's assets include 6,000 reservoirs, 2,000 rivers, 33 MPs, and more leaks than a cabinet briefing. We head east now with a photo caption from The Times.
Former political workers of the Hungarian Communist Party sorting through secret party reports on the opinions of citizens destined for the pulping mill.
And that one was saved for us by Erica Abbott of Ramsgate. Mark Stein, only a slight geographical shift for your first question. Where are the old guard under a new guard?
This relates to any one of 15 Eastern European countries which have embraced democracy so wholeheartedly that now they have a situation where before they had one leader who was in power for 40 years, Now, everybody gets a turn to be leader, but only for a couple of days. So Egon Krenzer's gone, and I think there's another 15,000 East Germans to go, and then they'll take Sir Anthony Meyer for the as he's currently under house arrest in Clwyd, I think.
There was a big reaction at the White House. They had to tell Dan Quayle, Mr. Vice President, Honecker's gone. And he said, in that case, we'll have to start on the Carlsberg. Can't do the accent.
It's all about East Germany, in whose politics a week is considered a career. The question referred to the former leader, Erich Honecker, and revelations about his private lifestyle, which included Paradise Island holiday homes with marble bathrooms and kitchens full of West German luxuries, like food. Police also discovered a satellite TV dish mounted on a secluded wall. Mr. Honecker... Mr. Honecker is now under house arrest pending psychiatric report. And finally, by way of a clue for Alan Corran, a reverential conversation piece. Who thought role play was a lesson for daily breadwinners?
It happened last week that I got the Ingram's liturgical question, but this was a very strange thing. It's another piece of loopiness on behalf of the established church. They take priests to places and they brainwash them into being better priests. And part of the course last week for one of them was to talk to a roll. And they brought a number of vicars in, and they put a bread roll on a paper plate in front of them, and they said, would you mind talking to this roll? And one of them rebelled and said, I don't do that. I am a priest. I get £14 a week, and it's not for talking to a cheese sandwich. And apparently talking to this roll would be very good for them, I suppose, because it will train them in the ways of the more mindless parishioner. But this bloke rebelled and walked out.
Right.
And the role has now been instated as Bishop of York or something. I can't remember the fellow. He was Martin. Martin was his name.
Oh, great. Yes, well. It all concerns a course workshop on worship held for Church of England clergy by the Oxford Diocese, from which the Reverend Martin Dudley walked out after being asked to have a chat with a bread roll. The vicar described as childish the course in which members are asked to empathise and converse with symbolic inanimate objects like bread and course organisers. The organisers themselves, who clearly think the exercise is the best thing since sliced wafer, were unavailable for comment, though at a subsequent press conference they sent along a granary bap to answer questions. And at the end of the first round, as is traditional with the news quiz, the scores are tied at 4-4. Well played. Round two gets underway with this tale from our friend The Telegraph.
A Norwegian hunter, 50, was shot but not badly hurt when his young hound stepped on a pile of loaded shotguns. Police said yesterday that the dog will be given a second chance.
And we thank Mrs. Wiltshire of Leeds for that. Richard, your next one. Listen carefully. The clues are in there somewhere. Who's admitted economical blunders? But not the major.
Oh, I think they're trying to make me win this week. The strange, peculiar man who's the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the man with glasses, said that we'd got it wrong in the past, by which he meant Lawson had got it wrong. And that's why it was a good thing they got rid of Lawson and got him in. He didn't say that, actually. He said we. I mean, he said, like Mrs. Thatcher, it was the government, had made mistakes, and they were now on the right course.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. Right. Absolutely correct, Richard. This does all refer to John Major, Chancellor of the Overdraft, and a minister in the government of Europe's last remaining hardline state. This week he bravely adopted the popular Eastern Bloc stance of admitting the mistakes of his predecessor, the discredited Nigel Lawson, known as the Western Bloc. Simon, a subject dear to your heart, whose small talk was largely about the weather?
Must be reference to this extraordinary, the seasick summit, as we called it. The most telling description of what was in the Daily Mail turned out that Gorbachev, short of the president, had to spend the entire night talking to Anne Leslie of the Daily Mail. And at the end, they announced that the Cold War was over. So Anne clearly did a terrific job there. A great deal better than George Bush could have done.
Apparently they went to Malta in the first place because Bush's brother had been there once.
Bucky Bush.
Said it was a good place to go.
You go there, George. The weather's always terrific.
That's exactly what happened, isn't it?
I think it is.
Precisely.
Bucky Bush.
Bucky Bush,
yes. Bucky Bush. Part politician, part beaver. great man.
I hope that was rude. It's all about our two world leaders. Talking Turkey and his Soviet counterpart. Mr. Gorbachev, who officially ended the Cold War when they'd run out of things to agree on. It all happened, or rather didn't, during a specially convened summit cocktail party in Wistry aboard the Maxim Gorky, a Soviet bandwagon that patrols the Mediterranean on the lookout for East German ministers escaping by Lilos. Mark, it's your turn now for some music. The clue's in the animal reference, but as an added joy, there are some nicely constructed rhymes to wince at too.
This whole world may never change the way it's been, and all the ways of war can't change it back again. I'm searching for the dolphin in the sea. Sometimes I wonder.
So do I sometimes wonder. And the question is, Mark, who piped up to lure another wet into safer waters?
Well, I thought at first that was President Ceausescu's new single. It's got that sort of philosophy of holding fast in stormy waters. And I gather that's actually what happened, if this is what I'm thinking of, because there was a young lady who was swimming off the coast of Wales, and a dolphin came and held her fast in stormy waters. And attempted to have dolphin type biblical goings on.
Not on the news quiz. Perhaps on any questions.
I'm just waiting for my colleague to supply me with the other dolphin story of the week.
I have to say, this is a preface while my partner is reading my writing. Jolly sorry it wasn't another donkey in the sea. Are we having the Brigitte Bardot castrated donkey? Oh, yes. We're having that. Good.
Right. I take all that back as well.
Alan, I can
another dolphin, Mark.
Who was lured away from an unexploded...
There was an unexploded bomb.
Ah.
Yes.
There was an unexploded bomb. In World War II, the Germans dropped a bomb, which missed several dolphins. It didn't go off.
But was it the same dolphin who tried to have sex with the women?
No, it wasn't. Told you we shouldn't have had him back.
Tell us the story, Alan. It was a typically English story in that an unexploded bomb was discovered at the bottom of something with water above it, and terror gripped the entire neighbourhood. They didn't clear people out of their houses. They said, we think there's a dolphin out there somewhere. We must save the dolphin first.
Right.
And they came up with a mass band, which this dolphin responded to, and it followed a trombonist or something all the way up the beach. It was something like that. They played music, and this dolphin came ashore and had a slap-up fish tea. Screwed a couple of local nubilia, as Mark has pointed out. I can remember the days when if you gave a dolphin 10 bob, you could have a fine day out at South End. Anyway, it's that.
Yes, it all happened while the Navy tried to explode a submerged mine when a diver, Owen Davies, enticed Freddy the Dolphin into the safety of Amble Harbour with a £1 plastic recorder and a selection of hits from the shows. Alan, your proper question now. Who's made a friendly decision to ban dishes?
This is a village. It is a Quaker village.
Ah.
It's a village called North Eastwick, or East Bridge. And the Quakers have taken exception to Rupert Murdoch. They're almost entirely alone in this. And they've said nobody in North Eastwick can have dishes. because as soon as you have a dish, you get stripping Italian housewives coming in, and no one will be a Quaker anymore. Give us something with dolphins, say the Quakers. And they're not allowed to have any dishes at all.
Concerns the Quaker village of New Earswick. Yes. York, whose governing trust has banned satellite TV dishes. Richard, your next story was to be found in newspapers. Why might cold spots no longer endanger your dinner?
Is this the Brigitte Bardot castrated donkey?
Near, it's about microwave ovens.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
When you tell him the answer, he doesn't know.
Oh, dear.
The answer is that 30% of microwave ovens tested recently failed to meet health standards by having cold spots of less than 70 degrees, the minimum temperature recommended by the government for defrosting the elderly during fuel shortages. Simon, some music for you, and it's a tastefully upmarket version of a tune first put over by a popular beat combo of the 60s.
To be sad, I think it's today. The boy that's driving me mad, he's going away. He's got a ticket to ride. He's got a ticket to ride. He's got a ticket to ride, but he don't care.
Well, I knew that dolphins could sing, but I didn't know they sang like that. It was actually Kathy Barbarian. And the question is, who didn't have a ticket to take the railway for a ride?
Well, I can't remember his name. He was a commuter who had a first-class season ticket and complained because the ticket was to London. But, you know, one day he'd find the train went to Aberdeen, and the next day the microwave oven, in accordance with new John Sowell and Gummer regulations, was so powerful in the buffet that it actually not only cooked the food properly, but sterilized you at the same time. And so he decided, as a political gesture, not to have a ticket at all, but to travel on a used British Rail cheese sandwich, which he would show at the barrier at Waterloo every time. And then finally, so astute are they in Waterloo, after 3 months of this, they spotted it. They said, that cheese sandwich is past its sell-by date. And ran him in. And he was in court last week.
Quite right, quite right. Wonderfully answered. It's all about Jonathan Prentice, an infuriated rail commuter who used an out-of-date ticket and car park pass to expose British Rail's equally outdated attitudes. He was awarded a £900 fine to show him the error of his ways. British Rail were awarded a new chairman to show them theirs. Mark, why might opera lovers turn their nose up at Prokofiev?
There was this dolphin who tried to set... I do know this one. This is the new look opera to attract more people into the opera house. They now have scratch and sniff cards. I think it was at Prokofiev's Love for Three Oranges, but you don't just get a sniff of an orange juice. One of the scratch and sniff cards that you're told to sniff is of a man with terrible bad breath who breaks wind a lot. I don't understand why you have to pay, you know, £98 a ticket to go to the opera and meet a man with very bad breath and breaks wind a lot. I mean, you could just travel on the underground. But that's what it is.
This is all because the English National Opera have started embellishing performances of The Love of Three Oranges with scratch and sniff cards. They have yet to release details of the cards that accompany their touring version of Cats. Alan, whose courtly dance was too much?
This is a woman called Patricia Smith, who designs things that ballet dancers can put their kit into. And, thank you. As it were, kit bags for ballet dancers. Anyway, and she designed a couple of these, and when the London Ballet Company slotted its ballet dancers into it, they were all over the place, and everything showed up, varicose veins and little wens on their backsides, and then their calves were baggy, and they wouldn't pay her. They can get very rough, ballet dancers. They minced round there and screamed and shouted. And said, we're not going to pay for these tutus. And so she went to court, and then she withdrew her action, but she's going to have to pay all these costs. And all these unfortunate ballet dancers walking around looking like cozied kettles. Yes. Not as good as a donkey. If you saw a donkey in a tutu, you'd see something. That'd be design.
You'd have to wait for the donkey.
Yes. Story of my life. Very well.
<laughs> Well, let me tell you the scores at the end of round three are still tied at 12 all. You're doing awfully well, Chuck. The Woodford Guardian and Gazette provides us with this interesting episode.
A 42-year-old Woodford Green housewife got a shock when she answered a knock at the front door on Friday night. At around 11 p.m., the woman heard a voice call out, "You're next, you're next," and a man indecently exposed himself through the letterbox. Police have issued a rather limited description of the man. He's white.
At least dolphins can sleep soundly. Oh, dear. We have to thank Pat Bishop of Woodford Green, who should be ashamed of herself for drawing our attention to that. Richard, your final question is, as usual, a musical one, and my only hint is that you listen carefully for the animal reference.
Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities are Mother Nature's recipes that bring the bare necessities of life.
Richard, what are the bare facts about Cuisine Nouvelle in Bristol?
I knew we had to lose sometime. It was all going too well, wasn't it?
Don't you know this one?
No, of course
about
not.
About the bears in Bristol?
I knew about this donkey.
No.
Brigitte Bardot and the donkey.
I will tell you what it is. It is the bizarre story of Misha and Nina, two glum polar bears at Bristol Zoo, who've been in therapy with a behavioural food psychologist. They've apparently responded very well to food embedded in ice cubes and garlic-flavoured logs, cooked in the way polar bears in the wild would do it themselves.
Jolly interesting story it was, too.
I found that.
I missed it in the Telegraph.
Simon, your question now. Why didn't a famous Nancy find dressing too taxing?
Oh, this is Nancy Reagan.
Right.
Just say no. And she didn't. They gave her these extraordinary designer dresses, which cost each roughly what one would expect to sell one's house for in London these days. And the tax people are after her. And so she fled to London and was doing a book signing in Harrods.
Interviewed by Linda Lee Potter.
Right, and by Terry Wogan. Do you think he put his hand on her knee? Probably have gone right through if he had, wouldn't
it? Yes, it's all about the Reagans, because much of the wardrobe, as worn by Nancy and hidden in by Ronnie, was borrowed rather than purchased and is probably taxable. A defensive former president proclaimed, "There's only one skeleton in my closet, and I've been happily married to her for 30 years. We move on with another sad saga from Truro, this time from the West Britain.
The firemen were called to the house at 10:20 p.m. on Friday, and two appliances attended. Mr. Head said that he couldn't believe how much damage could be caused. "Attempting to put a price on your possessions is virtually impossible," he said, holding up the remains of a disused hamster cage.
Well, thanks there go to Mrs. Rose Morgan for sending it in. Mark, your question. Why might soccer fans behave better if treated like sardines?
this is a reference to English football fans who are going to the World Cup. And because they have behaved so well, they're going to be especially treated by being put on the luxury resort of Sardinia. And if they try to escape to the mainland to get a couple of pints of lager, then sex-crazed dolphins will nibble their shorts off.
It's all to do with the British soccer squad for the 1990 World Cup. Team mascot Colin Moynihan, the Minister of Sport, the only man smaller than his ID card, is now pressing the World Cup authorities to hold our opening matches on Sardinia. Already thousands of England fans are making plans to fly over to the island to watch England's progress in the Cup and then fly home the next day. Alan, and here it comes now. You've been waiting for it the whole programme. How did a famous animal lover put a stop to animal loving?
Well, this could be almost anything, Barry, really. It's almost impossible to answer, simply because I remember that Sir Anthony Meyer, just before his great triumph, was referred to as a donkey. And I have the feeling that what Margaret Thatcher did to him is what Brigitte Bardot did to this unfortunate animal that was in her yard. No, quite straightforwardly. Brigitte Bardot, the dream of my youth, when she didn't do things like this, he's not in my dreams. hopped over a Saint-Tropez fence, or wherever it is, and she took a large razor blade to a neighbor's donkey. There was a clang, or two clangs, and this donkey was then effectively removed from the donkey race and became whatever the word is for a castrati. And she did this because she didn't want the donkey to come over the fence and roger her female donkey. Because she had her female donkey, no, her mare. She had a very old mare. Yes.
Sir Anthony Meyer.
Very old Meyer living over the fence. Oh. And she didn't want it to be subjected to any unsavory dolphin procedures. And she actually won in court.
She did indeed.
I knew it'd be worth waiting for.
Oh, shut up. And so another program is put peacefully to bed. But before I give you the final scores, may I ask the panelists to read to us. Richard, have you brought along anything interesting?
Well, I think it's a sort of transplant story from the Isle of Wight, County Press. Property worth £170 was stolen in a series of burglaries at retail units in Bumbles Lane on Sunday night. A veterinary surgeon was also entered, but nothing was taken.
Simon, what have you got for us?
Well, American slang and phrases is very different from ours, and so we found some wonderful headlines when living in the States, and one of my favorites was from a recent Washington Post sports pages about a baseball player who was so accurate, the theme was, that he could hit the ball precisely where he chose, and the headline on the story was, "Brett so good he can pick his spots."
Well, I like it anyway. Mark, what have you brought for us?
Well, I've got a cutting from the Dartford Times, which is about improved emergency services in the Essex area and the Kent area. They're going to have doctors who are cruising the motorways. They also go on then to say their launch follows the announcement by Essex Fire Services that they want helicopters to patrol the Dartford Tunnel. I knew there was something caught in my roof rack, Barry, but I just...
Well played. Alan, what have you got for us?
I got one from the Bradford Telegraph and Argus. A man who pleaded guilty at Bradford City Court to being drunk was asked by the chairman what he had to say. And he replied, "I've just come out of hospital where I've been having treatment for my drinking. I had a drink to see if they'd cured me."
On that cheery note, let me give you the scores at the end of the quiz, which are, in spite of every effort we put into making the Ingramses win, unfortunately it hadn't worked out. The scores at the end of the contest are Richard Ingrams and Simon Hoggart, 14, but Alan Corran and Mark Stein, 16. This week's winners. Well played, guys. And we end with another look at life in the East with this clip from the Emergency Post, a local evangelical newsletter sent by Keith Millichap of Caerphilly.
Prague housewife Vera Chermak, broken-hearted at her husband's desertion of her, jumped from the window of her third-floor apartment block in a suicide attempt. She landed on Mr. Chermak, who was walking along the street. He died, she survived.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingram, Simon Hoggart, Mark Stein and Alan Corran. The chairman was Barry Took, and the news is read by me, Clive Roslin. The programme was written and compiled by John Langdon, with the producer, Armando Iannucci.